America.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Yeah. Hold your kitties tight. It's a wonderful night in Wyoming. It's been really hot, but it's really cool. Actually, I have the window open so the drones can hear us and target us more easily. How is my wonderful, beautiful, talented, and laughs a lot co-host, Diana?
Great. There I go, laughing again.
That's part of your that's charm. Fine. That's good. It is fine. It is fine.
Okay.
Yep. What's your last name today? What are you going by today?
Still going by Kyler.
Okay.
I thought about at one point doing the whole like completely changing my last name thing to Sanglier Sauvage, which is French for wild boar, which is what Kyler means in German.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
But Sanglier Sauvage. There you go. Sounds really sexy.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like the name of a. Not a stripper. What do you call the classy ones?
Exotic dancer?
Nah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever they call them in New Orleans, because they can't really have strippers in New Orleans, of all things. Because it's one of those towns that's like built on sin, but then at some point some politicians came in 80 years ago and said, we need to roll back the sin.
So about burlesque?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you. There
it sounds
you go,
like a burlesque dancer.
Cool.
Yep. Yep.
I could roll with that.
So what's on your mind with tyranny and liberty this week? We have a lot of topics to get through. To enjoy. I don't want to make it sound like we have an inbox and an outbox and it's drudgery. It's joyful, man.
No, it's very I feel like I am constantly learning new things and exposing myself to not necessarily new things, but old things and seeing them through new eyes. And so one of the things more recently, in fact, last night, I watched George Lucas's first film, THX 1138.
Now, I've never seen it, but I've heard a lot about it, and I know that geeks really like it.
Yeah, and I can see where liberty-minded people might really enjoy it as well, because when you watch it And it's very similar in vein to movies like, or stories like in Brave New World and 1984, where the state has basically taken over every aspect of your life, including your personal life, in which you may not have sex. The state has become your religion. There are moments in the film which are just mind-blowing, where when you have problems that you need to talk to someone, you go into a little booth set up, and in that booth they have this medieval a rendering of a medieval painting of Jesus, but this particular being was created by the state, and it's called Om, O-M-M. Interestingly enough, yeah. And they go in there and they talk about their problems, and it's just a recording that says to you, you know, yes, I understand. And then it explains to you how you're such a good citizen of the state, and you're such a good worker, and continue being productive, and blessings of the state and blessings of the masses and things like that. It's so creepy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a freedom film, right? Because it's showing this is what you want to avoid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not saying that this is a good thing at all.
All of his movies... Almost all of his movies have some kind of giant state and the heroes are the other guys fighting it.
Right.
I mean, Star Wars, you know, fighting the Death Star, fighting the Empire, Raiders of the Lost Ark, fighting the Nazis and the Arabs. No, wait, the Arabs are on his side. No, he shoots an Arab. He says Arab in it. I don't say Arab. I say Arab. But
that's good to know.
It's a whole bunch of weird different collections of guys who are bad from different parts of the world in that one. And actually, the interesting thing is that's not something – I mean, the whole movie he wrote and made up, but he didn't make up the concept of Hitler searching for the Lost Ark. Hitler actually was –
Hitler had a really, really bizarre, twisted religious view. It was kind of like satanic Catholicism or something.
Right.
It was basically like Catholicism combined with Nordic ideas of a pure white race coming from Vikings to him. And like it was basically like he kind of rewrote the Bible with him in it. And part of that was he really did believe that certain Christian items from history could be used to increase his power. And one of them was the box that, you know, the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy Grail. Isn't the Ark of the Covenant the box that the Holy Grail goes in?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He was looking for both of those.
Not the Holy Grail. The Ark of the Covenant is where the
Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments, yes.
Yeah.
The actual tablets of the Ten Commandments.
Well, he wasn't looking for that so much as he was looking for the actual Holy Grail, and looking for all sorts of like bones of the saints and things like that.
Relics.
And sent, militarized crews, like archaeologists with machine guns, basically, which is a joke from another movie. There's that movie about L.A. where L.A. is destroyed by a volcano and the guy escapes to Wyoming and goes to Yellowstone and it's locked down and he sneaks in and John Cusack plays him. You know the movie? It's a recent End of Days movie.
Oh, yeah. 2012 or something.
Yeah. Good movie. I like watching L.A. destroyed as someone who left there in disgust. But
I just like disaster movies. I love them. They're
but
so exciting
to
me.
Really
destroy
funny,
the world.
There's a really funny line in that movie where, he gets caught by the Army Corps of Engineers and a bunch of soldiers standing, Marines standing around with machine guns. And he's like, what are you guys doing here? And the government guys are like, nothing, just archaeology. And he says, do you always do archaeology with machine guns? It's like the government does, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, you know, the U.S. government's kind of like the Nazis. They send machine gunned men with archaeologists to do things in places that they shouldn't be. Although, what could you say about they shouldn't be anywhere, I guess. But, okay, let's go on with some of his other movies. Let's see. All the Star Wars, Indiana Temple of Jones, Temple of, that one.
We all know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but he just has a lot of movies where the bad guy is a state gone mad with power, and the good guys are plucky rebels fighting this giant unstoppable thing and winning, which is really interesting. And a lot of his stuff has kind of a echoes the Jews against the Nazis in the rebellion, the ghetto uprising, which is something he's interested
in. Poland?
Which was really amazing. It was basically like, it's a good pro gun people use it as a good case for don't give up your guns. Cause basically
right.
it was like a couple dozen citizens that were locked in their own neighborhood and about to be killed. Like, they had a couple like broken revolvers that didn't work, and they'd use them and sneak up behind a Nazi and shoot him in the back of the head and take his rifle, the chocolate in his pocket and his uniform so they could pass and pretend to be a Nazi and get more guns and things like that, which is pretty cool. It was guerrilla warfare with people who were not trained in it. But the thing about Lucas, he's such a like his films have such a, little guy versus the giant Goliath, David versus Goliath, good over evil. But he totally backs Obama. He loves Obama, man.
Total status.
He's been honored by Obama. I am blown away by how people can't see that Obama is helming the Death Star, or at least building it up to hand over to probably Jeb Bush, or Hillary Clinton.
Hillary.
Yeah. So it's going to be Hillary versus Clinton in this next –
Hillary versus Clinton.
I've heard
Hillary
that before.
Versus Jeb.
It's going to be a Hillary. It's going to be a Clinton versus a Bush. Is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Oh yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, thinking of like Bill Buford says, history doesn't rhyme. It doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. I'm watching this really cool show.
Really good one.
You ever seen this show called Sherlock? It's like a BBC modern Sherlock Holmes that has an iPhone and stuff. It's in modern times.
It's got that guy that plays Julian Assange in it, though, I think.
Does
right?
it? Because I thought the guy in it looked like Julian Assange. The guy playing Moriarty. Or playing that character type, his brother, looks like Julian Assange. It's because he played Julian Assange in that biopic. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, but have you seen it?
What, the Sherlock?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that. That's one I haven't seen.
But it's like, speaking of history rhyming, the Watson in there is a recent Afghan war vet, Dr. Watson. He was an army doctor. And the original Watson was an Afghan war vet from the war that the UK fought in Afghanistan in the late 1800s. It's like, the unwinnable place to have a war for the empires. Because you get things like people walking up to people with broken revolvers, shooting them in the head and taking their gun.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
All right. That was quite a wormhole I dragged you down. Let's come back out and you can tell me more about this movie.
Okay.
What's it called again? Say it again.
It's called THX 1138.
Is that the name of a robot in it?
No, that's actually that they give the citizens numbers, a series of alphanumeric characters for their names, and it's prefixed with three letters followed by four numbers, and that's his name. That's the main character's name, and Robert Duvall plays him. And
a young, sexy Robert Duvall.
Oh man, let me tell you,
1971.
Woo, yeah, he looked good. But anyway, which is because Shelley Duvall is his daughter. And I started doing this time thing. And I know that Shelley Duvall played in The Shining, which came out when late 70s, early 80s.
Did she play Olive Oil too? She totally looks like Olive Oil in The Shining.
Yeah, she totally does. Yeah. But it's like she's his daughter. How old was he when he had her?
12.
So yeah, apparently something like that. But anyway, so he played. And the only reason why he kind of wakes up to the whole state thing, taking over his life and everything, is because of his roommate in the movie. And her name is L-U-H, and I don't remember the numbers, but he calls her Le because L-U-H. And like love. but anyway, so she's his roommate, and they don't have relations. But she's in love with him.
That sounded very square. They don't have relations.
They don't have
like a Southern Christian. Oh, wait, you're a Southern Christian.
I'm not
denigrating you. I'm just saying that sounds like something a Southern Christian would say. They do not have relations. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Exactly.
We'll be back with more on Freedom Fiends After Dark with Michael Dean and Diana Kyler.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Only because of dynamics.
We're back on the air.
Cool.
Yeah. Behind the scenes with the Freedom Fiends. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends After Dark. So Diana. Yeah. So you were there having relations with George Lucas in the South, and then what happened?
That's right. Yeah. So they don't have, they're not allowed to have sex. That's a bad thing.
We're talking about the movie THX 1138. If you're just tuning in. George Lucas's first movie. All right, go ahead.
George Lucas's first movie. Yes. So his mate, L-U-H, ends up detoxing him because they're all drugged up all the time. The only way that they can be happy and productive and do what they're supposed to do every day, stay in line and not, rock the boat at all, is to be drugged up all the time. And so she somehow in there, she starts to figure out that she doesn't want to be drugged up anymore. So she detoxes herself, and then she turns around and detoxes him and essentially wakes him up, from his ongoing, just haze. And they fall in love and they end up having sex and they get caught. of course, because everybody's watching everybody all the time. And he gets in trouble. He gets put in some kind of weird limbo prison where everything is white. It's very strange. And he ends up escaping with this hologram a hologram that decided he didn't want to be a hologram anymore. And so he just sort of becomes real. It's kind of cheesy, you know, but I mean, the underlying story is actually really good.
Well, it sounds a lot like it draws a lot from Brave New World in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Brave New World of the everyone has to be drugged all the time, and it's a dystopian tyrannical future. And 1984 in that it's a dystopian tyrannical future, and it's got a couple who escape. I think Brave New World had a couple who escaped too, but so does Logan's Run. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the I'm really fascinated with post-apocalyptic, not too distant future, you know, one man or one man and one woman against the state kind of movies. And the 70s produced a whole lot of them that were really good. Rollerball was really good. And it really what it comes down to is like sort of a love conquers all thing, but also the state really doesn't want romance because they don't want romance. They don't want families because, you know, in sexual relations, that's like the one time, you know, during and maybe a few seconds after, that's like the time that most people just could care less what's outside their door. And they like all your state worship dissolves away, you know?
Yeah.
Families that are strong, really challenge the government because most people put their family over the state.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not at all. Absolutely not. That, you know, it takes our mind off of being productive and, you know, continuing
paying taxes,
to
produce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, it was really good. And it was very, you know, relevant, really. For the times that we live in and for the way things are starting to – the turn that things are starting to take or have been starting to take for some time.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed with a lot of geeks because they're of above average intelligence and so many of them are still into state worship. Like that was mind-blowing to me about it's mind-blowing to me about Richard Stallman, one of the co-creators of GNU/Linux. It was mind-blowing to me about some of the guys on the Namecoin team. I mean, they have this thing that could eliminate the government as far as like being able to take down websites.
Mm-hmm.
But they're wanting to like partner with ICANN or they're active in local politics or state politics in whatever country they're in, and they're backing Obama, some of them. And I don't get that's why I'm really digging this BitShares thing. Your friend, what was your friend's name? Christian. That was his real name.
He
was messing around with some other name for a while. But yeah. He talked about this thing called BitShares, and then somebody else turned me on to it. Someone from the Namecoin world who'd done some work for Namecoin turned me on to the BitShares thing. And it's like they not only have an alternative DNS thing coming out, they have like a whole galaxy of like replace everything. And they're like, you know, the guy who invented it, Daniel, is like a straight up ANCAP. I mean, he's a fiend, man. Mm-hmm. They're good people, and so are the Namecoin people, but the Namecoin people like are kind of so I get so frustrated when people understand the workings under the hood of something like Namecoin or Linux that can change the world, and like without the state it was created completely voluntary, and they still think you need the state for other things. Frustrates me. So that's why I like BitShares, because they don't go in that direction.
That's right.
We'll be back with more after this trip to the free market, baby. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons.
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. It's the nighttime edition of the Freedom Fiends, currently called Michael Dean After Dark, but it's going to get rebranded as the Freedom Fiends. It's going to be 7 days a week, like Free Talk Live, like the baby, like the retarded baby brother of Free Talk Live.
So, oh, no.
Our co-host tonight is Diana.
Hey.
Kyler. And she laughs a lot. I'm teasing her about it. She said, "Do I laugh too much on radio?" I'm like, she wanted to know if she should suppress it. And I'm like, absolutely not, man. You should do it more. It's cool. I like it. So
like some kind of like maniac.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah. You know, it's like I don't like morning zoo crew type radio, you know, mm-hmm. rah, rah, where they have sound effects and try to like be as shocking as they can without getting kicked off the air. And but you know, there's an energy to it I kind of like, and if you listen to my show regularly, you probably think I'm manic depressive. I'm not. I just have a lot of different energy swings. They're not mood swings; they're energy swings. And
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, like I was kind of mellow today. Well, today I just played a pre-recorded interview. I think I'm going to do that once in a while because it allows me to sleep in later on the weekends. Like I did that interview with that guy, like 2 weeks ago, had it in the can, and I just got up, you know, 5 minutes before the show and pressed play. It's hard on Sundays, man, doing two shows 12 hours apart. It's the one day of the week that I'm just slayed. Mm-hmm. But I got some naps in. Some naps in, so it's good. So did you see our big brother radio show Free Talk Live was in the New York Times today?
Yes, I'm so impressed and jealous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I want to be in the New York Times.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I know Ian loves it, but I don't do the kind of activism he does. Where like your neighbors want to lynch you and get the government to take your house and turn it into a museum for the state, like these people. Yeah. But yeah,
it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude, I must say.
Yeah, I like to speak in one direction. I don't like to take phone calls. I like to like blast out into the world like a shotgun. He's more like a laser scoped rifle of truth. I'm more like just a shotgun spewing rockets into the air, and they land where they do. I'm like the message in the bottle. I like to just put it out there and just run, you know.
Mm-hmm. And one way is extremely passive and the other way is extremely aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, I will get up in people's faces sometimes. What I really don't like doing is getting pulled into face beefs, which some people do. I guess it's activism.
I'm a voyeur over those kind of things. I just like look at them and snicker.
I'm not on face beef. I don't. It's not for me. It's a time suck. I had 3,500 friends on face beef from the show, and I deleted my account about a year and a half ago. And it's hard. It's like you can't just you have to like turn it off for 2 weeks and then not touch it before they'll let you delete it. They're like, it's kind of like the heroin dealer that shows up with the free hit when you're trying to kick.
Like, are you sure? Are you really sure?
Yeah. So this article in the New York Times, and this is not just on the blog version. This was on the paper, like, you know, millions of New Yorkers and people who want to be New Yorkers who live around the country picked up the paper today, had their morning coffee, and saw a picture of Garrett with his 70s fro feeding a parking meter and Ian Freeman talking into a same microphone I'm talking into, this really sexy RE. Well, I have the RE20. He has the RE27ND.
I've been in his studio. I've seen him.
Yeah. This picture, if you click on it, it gets really big. It's a great picture of him. And it's like, you know, young libertarian ladies should have this picture on their wall. Like, oh, Ian. Yeah, he's cute, man. He's the same age as Jesus, I think. He's 33 and something like that.
Yeah, they're all really young.
Yeah, I'm going to be 50 this month, man. I'm the cranky.
I'm going to be 50.
Ah, 50. I'm the cranky old. I look like Barney Rubble, man. I'm not the libertarian. I'm not the libertarian poster boy. I do look like Barney Rubble.
I like your hair.
Well, I'm gonna shave my head before I come there because it's getting too hot to have long hair, and I'm gonna look.
Oh, no.
I'm gonna look like Uncle Fester on the Addams Family when you meet me.
pretty funny.
So this article, Libertarians Trail Meter Readers Telling Town Live Free or Die, it's obviously written by someone who loves the state. But, mm-hmm. you know, no press is bad press with this kind of stuff. It says,
right.
Keene, New Hampshire. In most places, the parking enforcement officer reflects the municipal compact. Armed with only a gadget, they can spit out a ticket at the forgotten drop of a dime. The officer quietly serves civic and commercial life by ensuring that meters are fed. Okay, I'm gonna get rid of the in a world movie trailer voice. In most places, yes. But not here in charming Keene, where parking officers figure in the philosophical tug of war between a small band of activists who live by the motto Free Keene and the great majority of residents who were unaware that their city was in bondage. Keene's two parking meet officers, both women, are often videotaped by young adults known as Robin Hooders. They track down the whereabouts of the officers with two-way radio, feed expired meters before $5 tickets can be written, and leave a business card that says, "We saved you from the King's Tariff." Welcome to Sherwood Forest, New Hampshire, where these acts of charity have led some donations and some gratitude, but also sidewalk tensions, harassment allegations, and litigation. Mm-hmm. I can't believe the city of Keene sued them. And it was for a civil conspiracy, which I don't know what that is. I've only heard of criminal conspiracies, but apparently there are civil conspiracies, and they were charged with conspiring to put nickels in parking meters. And and the city lost, and they even brought in an outside attorney. They didn't use the city attorney. They got a better attorney. They spent untold amounts of money losing. And the unintended consequence was they got a lot of national press for the Free Keene activists, because this New York Times article is not the first thing. This has been on Fox News nationally. This has been on MSNBC. This has been in a whole bunch of magazines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something called the Streisand effect. Do you know what that is?
You mentioned it before, and it's escaping me right now.
No press is bad press. Streisand effect is the idea that when you try to scrub something from the internet, you end up magnifying it on the internet. It's basically because Barbara Streisand has a private sprawling beachfront property in Southern California that's gated, you know, all the way around it except to the beach. And then she owns the beach, which you can't really legally do, but she does anyway. And someone got it. Some paparazzi got a helicopter and took close-up pictures of it and published them. And she sued that person for violating her privacy. And if she hadn't done that, it would have been like news for a day. But since she did that, it was news for years. And it just kept getting reprinted. And articles about the lawsuit would print the pictures too. So, yeah, the Streisand effect is another way I've put it heard, and had it put to me, is in the show News Radio. Did you ever see that show?
Oh, yeah. That's the one where the Kids from the Hall guy used to play on, Dave Foley. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it had a great ensemble cast. I mean, it had Joe Rogan. It had Candy Alexander. Everybody in it went on to do other things. It had the guy who killed himself on cocaine. What's his name?
Yeah. He was on Saturday Night Live. Yeah. Or what was his name?
I love that guy. The guy that played the attorney.
Yeah, he was awesome.
DJ, what was that guy's name?
Chris Farley?
Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman, right.
Yeah. So it was a great show, and Joe Rogan was on it. Joe Rogan played the electrician for the radio station, and this was like before anyone knew who he was, before he was an outspoken libertarian. But he basically played kind of a conspiracy theorist, kind of libertarian. Like, his nickname was the Unabomber with the other people who worked there, because he was mysterious and creepy. And he would do things like, you know, rewire all of the boards using duct tape and a garage door opener, you know, and it would work and then it wouldn't work. But, you know, he's the zany electrician that was smarter than everybody. But the thing was, he kind of like, he should have been a professor somewhere, but he's like, no, man, I want to be an electrician. I want to be left alone. So, but he said at one point, and this is really early on the internet, like 1995, 1996, there was a character who somebody had put something about them on the internet they didn't like, and they didn't understand the internet, and they're poking on the keys on the laptop, and they're like, "Hey, Joe, come fix this. Get this off the internet." And he looked at it and he goes, "Taking something off the internet is like taking pee out of a pool with a spoon." And that's really true even without the Streisand effect, but with the Streisand effect, it's even more true. So
I'm fascinated that you remember that in such detail.
Yeah, and I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
That's pretty impressive.
It's a weird gift slash curse, but yeah, I like the movies. I like the TVs. I've also like with stuff I like now that it's on Netflix, I go and I've seen every episode of Talk of News Radio like 4 times. So
okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Plus when it was on TV, so.
Yeah, I know Jaws by heart because I've seen it so many times.
Quite. What's that one? That's some hat, Harry. No, that's some bad hat, Harry.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, that's the logo.
Bad hat, Harry.
That's the logo of some TV show. Some TV company is called Bad
it's
Hat
called
Productions.
Bad Hat Harry.
Yeah, Bad Hat Harry Productions. Yeah. It's something I like. I forget what, but yeah. So, more on the Streisand effect and Ian Freeman finally making the New York Times. Now, here's a funny thing. When I was living in D.C. as a punk rocker, being homeless but working a day job in 1983 and 84 and living in an abandoned factory, I was friends with and also fans with Ian MacKay from Minor Threat, who was kind of like – he was to that scene what Ian Freeman is to the Keen activism scene. Mm-hmm. Like if you put it this way, with both of those people in that scene, if you say Ian, you don't have to say last name. People know who you're talking about. You know, it's like Cher or something, or Sting,
Cher, right.
Sting,
Madonna,
mono named people. So, I remember Ian MacKay, the singer from Minor Threat, the guy who runs, he was in Fugazi also, and he runs Discord Records, and he's in my movie DIY or Die: How to Survive as an Independent Artist, which I'm showing at Pork Fest and doing a Q&A after. Plug. Yep. And I remember. He was on the cover of the Washington – what's the big Washington paper?
Post.
Washington Post, yeah. He was on the cover – on the front page of that one day with an article about his scene, you know. And my friend, Bo, called that day the day the punks read the paper.
So funny.
And this is kind of the day the punk – you know, the day the Keeniacs and the Liberty Freaks like us read the New York Times. I don't read the New York Times.
Like when Ian talks, libertarians listen. Or punks listen, depending on which Ian you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then there was Ian – in some scenes, if you said Ian, it would mean Ian Curtis, the suicided singer of the great band Joy Division. Yeah, but
that would be new wave people.
No, man. It's post-punk, basically. So
okay.
Anyway, we're going to be back with more, talking about Ian Freeman, Liberty poster boy, looking real sexy here with his RE27ND microphone. It's awesome. We'll be back. Free market, man.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends, 7 days a week. It is 7 days a week. Actually, the Friday show is a best of, because even God had to rest one day a week, and I'm not him. So, Diana.
You sure?
No, man. I don't want to be God. That's
too much responsibility.
Yeah, it is, man. I don't want to be thought of as a hero either. I'm just a guy producing great content and yakking on the radio and holding my fort of 25 stations and just holding them solid and not giving them up. I'm trying to add more. I want to be Ian Freeman when I grow up. I want to be at 145 stations. That guy's awesome, man. And here's the thing, like, this guy has haters. Yeah, our friend Ian has haters. There's a group, there's a Facebook group called, what is it, Hate Free Keen? No, what is it?
Stop Free Keen.
Stop Free Keen.
Multiple exclamation points to make your point.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not, I mean, anybody could say, oh, I don't care what people say about me on Facebook. This is people that live in this town and are trying to, like, find any way they can to get the government to take this guy's house, throw him in jail, mess over his friends. I mean, they're, like, really petty about it. Like, the Victimless Crime Spree DVD by Derek J. I guess they found like there's a song in it that's copyrighted by someone else. And they're like, how do we contact BMI and ASCAP and tell them that there's a violation here? Like, man, that's it's a lot more commitment what Ian and these Robin Hooders are doing to like live in a beef with people. And they're not looking for beef. They're like, they're trying to change things and make them better and bring more freedom. But I guess these people want, you know, Ian wants less taxes and more freedom. I guess these other people want less freedom and more taxes.
Yeah.
They actually joked about, you know, if like there's a lien on his house, which is probably just an administrative thing and he'll probably fix it up, get it taken care of. And they don't like to take houses in that town on, you know, owing a little bit of taxes. But these people are like, yeah, I hope they take it and someone buys it and turns it into a museum to the state and government. I mean, that is like literally these people want the Keen guys. They want them dead. They want them. I mean, some of them have posted death threats, but they want them so uncomfortable as to approach dead. They want them homeless and defeated and in jail. Man, that is just bitter and petty and insanely, it's the state. That is how people who back the state and back government and back voting and back more laws and more laws. That's what they want. They want Big Brother state, literally the Big Brother state to come along and beat up their foes, beat up people they don't like. That's what they want.
It's a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like kidnapped by the state and they have come to love their kidnappers.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll defend them, you know, and defend themselves from having their eyes opened, you know, to see things the way they really are. And they've taken the blue pill and they're sticking with it.
they defend the state like they're defending their mother. And that's my saying for the acid test of, can you have a spirited discussion with somebody and help them? When you're talking about liberty to people and, you know, they ask something like, well, who would build the roads without the government? And if you answer that and they say, well, maybe, but how would this other thing? Like if they're still curious, but they don't sound like they want to put you in a cage and they don't sound like they're defending their family, there may be hope. And maybe if you're a very patient person, you can continue to talk to them. But if they go straight to defending the state, like defending their mother, walk away.
Right.
That's what I say.
Yeah, I know. It's really difficult and it's hard, especially if it's somebody that's in your family. You know, I have a very, for whatever reason, I have this loyalty to my family. I love my family and we disagree vehemently on so many issues, you know, and so most of the time we don't really talk about that kind of thing. You know, it's a lot more just, you know, so what's going on with you at work kind of thing, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Yeah. So you said something about this one particular person in this article, the Afghan war vet or Iraq war vet that works as a meter maid in Keene.
Yeah, right. He used to work as one meter maid. That's kind of funny. But he used to work as a...
We're
going to break, aren't we?
Yeah, I'll finish up really quick. Basically, he was in the... he's a war vet. And then he went and got a job as a meter maid in Keene and quit because he said the stress was too much.
We'll be back.
That's MichaelWDean.com.
Good evening, my fellow worms.
I know some things I don't know.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
È stato sperimentato.
We had enough
on scene.
The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to MichaelWDean.com for more. That's MichaelWDean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
You know, this is Michael Dean on Freedom Fiends, and you know, without the state to get in your way, we would not only be driving around flying cars that drive themselves, we would be teleporting, because governments get in the way of innovations everywhere. I mean, there's a great ad on Free Talk Live and LRN. I don't know what it's for. It's for some Freedom and Liberty Foundation, business foundation, and the ad is really cute. It's this skit of a guy going into, like, his county registrar's office and trying to get a business license, and he tells the lady that he's invented a way to float, like to float off the ground. And she's like, "Oh yeah, you are. You're floating off the ground." And she lists all of the things he needs to do to start a business and have the state approve of it, and he just gives up. And really, like, that's it. Like, mm-hmm. People who want to innovate things, it's so difficult. It gets more difficult every day. The really hilarious thing is New York State is running ads on TV, at least in Wyoming, if not other places, saying, move to New York State. It's friendly to business. It's friendly to business. And it's like, mm-hmm. Are you friggin' serious? I mean, shut the front door, man. New York State is like the least friendly. You like that? I got that from Lou today. Shut the front door. But New York is the worst place I can imagine to start a business. I used to live in New York. I mean, it's in the 40s, they were probably kicking over lemonade stands for not having permits. But you want to talk about flying cars.
Yeah, I really do. I saw an article actually on Face Beef. That's where I get some of my ideas. that it was actually on in Discover magazine online. And this they're actually coming out with a real feasible prototype for a flying car. And I can just tell you that when I was a kid, I watched The Jetsons. Who didn't watch The Jetsons? And I just knew. And I remember when it became the year 2000, and I was perplexed as to why we were not flying or
where's my flying car?
Exactly. Where's
you
my flying car?
You
want to
know where your flying car is? All of the money was stolen from everybody by the government to pay the best scientists to stop working on flying cars and work on drones. That's where the flying car is.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I knew the government was, messing that up in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting in this article, and the title of the article is The Flying Car That Could Expedite Your Morning Commute. What I found interesting is that the first patent for a flying car was issued in 1918. And it was a flying vehicle that was also submersible in water. But that was in 1918.
There were, I saw a documentary on History Channel, and it was inventions that should have caught on but didn't. And they had a whole section on aqua cars. It was actually a big thing in the 60s, or a big promise in the 60s. Like, a bunch of companies came out with cars that you could just drive into the river and then, paddle. They had paddles to electric motors to take them across the river. Mm-hmm. And then, you were not stopped by rivers the way that normal cars are. And it didn't catch on for a bunch of reasons. Some were technological, some were regulatory. That was a big thing. There were some flying cars, literally. They were like airplanes that when you landed them, you folded the wings up and they converted to a car.
Right.
And it was regulation. That was the problems. It was like, the FAA could not, the people couldn't jump the hoops of dealing with the regulations you have to make and then drive an automobile, and also the FAA, and they couldn't do the same thing with, you know, the boat licensing and the car licensing.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think the flying car that you're talking about, that actually, yeah, I mean, I remember that, and they actually needed runway space to take off with that one. They needed, I think, 1700 feet of runway. So it was more kind of like a plane. This particular one, it's called the TFX. put out by
kind of sounds
called,
like that movie by
THX. I know, exactly. Oddly enough, it's put out by a company called Terrafugia, and it does a vertical takeoff and landing, just like an Osprey, and so it would eliminate the need for runways. Yeah, and the description is that it is designed to seat four passengers. It will fit inside a standard single car garage. It will travel 500 miles on one trip, reach speeds of 200 miles an hour, and it would just take 5 hours of training for the average driver to learn how to operate it safely. Yeah. And the problem right now, you could actually buy one right now, but it's $280,000. So well, if you want to buy one right now. Which
What drives the price of things down to a reasonable amount is adoption.
Production.
I mean,
yeah, adoption and production.
Adoption,
yeah.
And then, you know, improvements in technology. I mean, I'm just thinking about in computing. Okay, my friend bought one of the first DVD players that I ever saw, which was like CD player in 1985.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was like a rack mount thing that, you know, was not portable. It sat in your, you know, on your shelf, and it cost like $4,000. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when a friend of mine got one of the first DVD CD burners, which wasn't much smaller, and that was in probably 1995, 1996, and it cost like, $1,500, and the blank DVDs were like $10, and they often failed when you burned them. You know, you often got a, like, you know, burn fit copy failed error message and had to throw it away and put a new one in. And now they're like, they're free. I mean, they come in computers, but if you have to buy one, one that goes in a computer is like $8 probably on Newegg, and blanks are like 20 cents, if that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember a lot of, you know, I remember when a lot of new technology came out, like the microwave oven.
Yeah, yeah.
No one could afford one of those. My sister had one, and in 1979 or 1980, and we actually went to visit her for Thanksgiving, and she cooked a whole turkey in it. It wasn't very good, but she actually cooked the whole turkey in it.
My mother had one of the first microwaves, and I'm kind of wondering if that's what gave her the cancer that killed her. I mean, she used to stand
Seriously?
In front of it and cook all the time, and they emitted a lot of radiation back then. They weren't very safe.
Yeah.
My dad had one of the first so-called pocket calculators when in 1974. It was a Texas Instrument. It was more of a desktop model and had to plug in. And it had Nixie tubes instead of LEDs. You know what Nixie tubes are?
No.
They're literally tubes, like tubes in an old radio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
oh,
they're
yeah,
small.
Like radio
they're small. And they have characters in them. Like you can do alphanumeric readout.
Oh,
them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, I remember the calculators that had those. And I remember those because you could make words with them and stuff.
Yeah. You could like write, put a number and turn it upside down and it says boobs. Boobs.
Right.
Yeah. But my dad had this one, and it didn't even have scientific functions. It was just multiply, add, subtract, and divide. Mm-hmm. And it was $750 in 1975. That money now is worth, two or three times that. You know, so it was like, let's say $1,500 for the first publicly sellable or buyable pocket calculator. And, you know, if they hadn't caught on, nobody would still be making them. And if they did, they would be $1,500. But my wife does math all the time with a calculator. She bought at Walmart for 99 cents. It's like it's flexible. It kind of like you can roll it up.
Yeah.
And it's solar powered. We've never put a battery in it. We've had it for like 5 years.
You know, we sound really old talking about how much things costed back in the day.
I remember you could buy a gallon of milk and see a picture show for a nickel.
But, you know, I think it's important for the youngins.
True.
I do not have any, unlike old people, here's why we're not old. Old people want to have a reverence for clinging to the past. Like, I know old people who are like, I hate this electronic mail. I think they should make it the law that everything has to go through the postman. That is so square, and that is so reactionary. And that is the kind of thing, that kind of thought, and those people voting is the reason, well, people voting, but those people voting is the reason not, you know, not only that we still have people whose full punch-in government job is delivering spam mail in on dead tree form to your house. That's all my mailman does now.
Yeah,
that's also the reason we don't have flying cars, is because people who want to cling to the past. Now, I think there's a value in what we're doing, which is talking to younger people about the exponential advances in technology during our lifetime. I'm 50. Yeah. Do you want to say about how old you are or not?
I'm about how old?
Okay.
No, I'm 48.
Okay. So you remember back, when, and,
You know, I mean, remember a lot of what you remember, put it that way.
I really dig, put it this way. There's a bunch of technologies that I play in all the time and work in all the time, like photography, videography, writing books, writing articles, recording music, that I literally learned on the analog way. And I think it made me a better, made me better at it. Cause for instance, let's see, I used to shoot Super 8 film on film, video film when I was 15, and it cost like $1 a minute back then for the film and the developing, and you had to wait a week to do it. So it actually made you really plan your shots better. It made you really plan your story better. And it made you plan your editing better, because you had to actually like cut film and tape it together and then run it through a projector to see it. So it wasn't like today where you could just do it on your cell phone and edit it on a laptop computer, which here's the thing though. If I had to do it all over again, I think a lot of older people would say yes. And anybody who's going to learn to do film should go do it on film first. And I say balderdash. I say, why? You know, it's a poisonous medium. It's an expensive medium. It wastes silver. It pollutes the environment. It creates toxins in the world. And it's expensive and slow and brittle and not archival. And I did the same thing with music. I played in bands that went in the studio as early as 1985 and recorded on 8-track and 16-track, 1-inch and 2-inch tape when you had to pay, you know, between $100 and $500 an hour for a studio and an engineer. And I pretty much have that same equipment in my home right now, and it costs a lot less, and I can do a lot more with it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the problems with people – is they don't understand that just having the equipment and the software doesn't make you able to be an engineer or a songwriter.
Right.
But,
yeah,
you know, I have the background of being both. You know, I was in a band that was on Warner Brothers. We got flown to Europe. We got flown to New York to record in a major studio. We had a record put out on a major label. And it ruined my life. But, you know, I learned a lot from it. That
it's funny the things you can learn from the things that ruin your life.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be back with more life-ruining talk radio on the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free, unregulated market. Worms.
Worms.
Meow.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Michael Dean. broadcasting from deep within Garrett's hair. Garrett has this total 70s fro. It's awesome. Yeah,
he rocks it.
Well, there's a webpage someone just, Lusander, one of our co-hosts, just sent me. It's a webpage called, or a Facebook page, face beef page called Garrett's Hair. And Garrett's Hair, I think someone just made this and it has 33 followers. So search Garrett's Hair on Facebook if you want to like Garrett's Hair.
I just liked it. I like Garrett's Hair.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. So, where do you want to go from here?
So we were talking about, we started to talk about globalization.
I remember. Well, here's the segue.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about it. Globalization.
Oh, that's right.
We talked about it. You can't tell. This is just such a long ongoing conversation. Some of it's on the radio. Like you forget that some
that's true.
Like the mics weren't on. That was during the break. So I was talking about how the, you know, I used to go to make music. I used to have to save up or have a label pay and go into studios and pay between $50 and $500 an hour for the room and the engineer and all the equipment. And sometimes points on the record. On the Warner Brothers record, we spent $35,000 making it, and Bill Laswell got 6 points on the record, which is a lot. That's 6 cents on every retail dollar that comes in on it. That's like more than we made on it.
Wow.
But the equipment price has gone down, and a lot of it is because of globalization. And globalization has a bad rap, and for good reason, but there's aspects of it I like. I would like to see a free market between all geographic regions that doesn't have borders.
Wonder how we could do that. Bitcoin.
Get rid of the government. Yeah, Bitcoin. Yeah, I asked Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy, one time on this show, what do you think is the future for the state? And he said, this is like the most accurate short description I've heard of what I think it's going to be. I think he's right. He said it's going to become more and more irrelevant and people are just going to ignore it more and more. Mm-hmm. And it will occasionally crack down really hard on one person doing a nonviolent crime to try to make an impression.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see that happening.
I like what Nima said. He thinks the state is going to be like, in 5 years, is going to be like Facebook or like MySpace.
MySpace.
Yeah. Like it's got 100 million users, but most of them haven't logged in a few years. Yeah.
I could see that happening.
I think definitely. It'll just be, you know, and I think dollars will just be what you pay your taxes and your fines with. And then real economy will happen with, cryptocurrencies like the BitShares and the Bitcoins and the whatever other flying car money, magical internet. I've heard it called, been described as Bitcoin, been described as magical internet drug money. That's funny.
Yeah, it is pretty funny.
Yeah, but the thing is, like with the microphones that we use to record to do this show, you know, I've got a few grand worth of equipment, and you've got $60 worth of equipment. Although you do have your Beats by Dre headphones. How much were they?
I have no idea. They were a gift.
They're pretty sexy.
I think they're pretty expensive, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't use them. I use – let me take my headphones off and see. I use the Sony MDR7606, which are great. They're like – they used to be like $100, and now they're like $50, and they are – they're really good for radio and for recording music because they're flat. They're really good. They have great sound, but a flat response. Whereas the Beats from Dre, here's the thing, like the Beats from Dre, Dre advertises them and puts his name on them and pretends like, yeah, I wear these in the studio because they have extra bass. Here's the thing. If you're recording music while wearing headphones with extra bass, you're going to mix the bass down in the recording. So basically, you would make anemic music wearing the Beats by Dre headphones, not bumping music.
Mm-hmm.
They're strictly for consumers, not for producers. And
yeah,
the headphones
I can
have
see
are for
that.
Producers. So the thing is, though, the price of all this gear has gone way, 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 way down. And part of it's adoption, but part of it is also like it's made in China. And people say, oh, we need to stop making it in China to save American jobs. And those are slave labor camps in China. And it's like China is a pretty messed up country in a lot of ways. And but a lot of their places where people are making like 15 cents an hour, they're not starving, whereas when they were farmers out in the sticks, they were starving.
Right, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
So I like that aspect of globalization. I don't call it globalization, though. I call it the free market, although it's not quite the free market because there's governments involved. But it could be freer. It could be better. But I like how technology's gotten cheap and brought it all to the people, man.
Yeah, so if things are really expensive, don't worry. The price will go down.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
And that's that music is my old band, Bomb, from the record Hate Fed Love from 1990 on Reprise / Warner Brothers.
It's that catchy.
It's catchy, yeah. I hope it's $35,000 worth, because that's what we spent of their money recording it. And then there's other stuff on here that actually probably sounds better, which was recorded on this $800 computer sitting in front of me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of the price of things going down from globalization, I sent you to a link on Amazon to get an atomic radio clock, which is actually,
yes,
it's actually a clock that syncs with the atomic clock, the government atomic clock in Colorado.
Sounds very futuristic.
Colorado Springs. Yeah. And I said, yeah, can you afford $30? And you're like, yep, I can do it. And I looked at it, and they've gone down to $19.97. They're $20 now. So the price has gone down while we were talking about it. That's the free market, man. Because it's probably me because I've been getting all my co-hosts to buy these things. So it probably drove the price down on Amazon. But yeah, they're giant wall clocks with big, big letters. If you want to get one, go to creamyradioaudio.com and just search the word clock. And I have two posts on there about atomic clocks. It's the big flat one that looks like a dinner plate with giant letters on it. And you said, yeah, giant letters so you can see them across the room when you're 50. And I said, yeah, it's like the jitterbug phone of atomic clocks.
That was funny. Yep. And I knew what that was.
The jitterbug. My wife and I joke about the jitterbug phones a lot because we have cell phones that are not smartphones. Like, I guess you can get the internet on them, but it costs extra, and you have to initialize something, and they're really slow with the internet. They're not Android phones, and they're about 4 years old. And it's like we use them so little that we just haven't upgraded. It's probably free to upgrade at this point, but we just haven't done it. So. You had another topic about citizens taking the law into their own hands. What is it?
Yeah, I thought this was really cool.
Where was this?
This is in New York City, actually.
Okay.
Of all places. Citizens post their own traffic signs.
What's the source? Name the source.
Name the source. That would be Fox New York.
Okay.
My Fox New York, yes. And so apparently at least one person has, well, multiple people, but this one in particular, which I thought was really cool, is apparently that a lot of the signs in New York about when you can park are very confusing.
Yeah.
So in order to avoid a traffic or parking ticket, this woman, Nikki Cillian Tang, I think I pronounced that correctly, I'm not quite sure, is that she created a sign that would indicate by color what time of day you can park there.
Yeah, it's like a green and red charts for the hours of the day, Monday through Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
It looks very good. I like what she did. And what they do, too. Fine her and take them down?
No, not yet. It doesn't look that way anyway. Mm. But then there's other people that are upset because New York City drivers are driving more than 30 miles an hour, and some other a guy posted a sign that says 20 is plenty.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so it's just like, but it's still, you know, it's an example of citizens taking issues into their own hands without the help from the government.
I like the name of this movement, the Tactical Urbanism Movement. I know some of that's been going on in Detroit where people are starting their own police agencies, basically, that actually prevent crimes and, you know, unlike the other ones, unlike the official ones. And they're doing community gardens without permits and things like that. You know what, you know what ends up happening a lot is like people do that in a neighborhood that's falling apart, improve it on their own without the government's permission, improve the public spaces, and then the government raises the taxes because the property rates have gone up.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll get you coming or going.
Yeah. Well, I have two stories about tactical urbanism. One is in my book, $30 Film School, which really, after my band broke up, you know, when I got off drugs 20 years ago, you know, I kind of had to reinvent myself. And one of the first things I did was wrote a novel, got it self-published. This is before, like, going to, you know, doing it online. Like, I went to a printer with files and used Quark and did the layout myself and paid $4,000 to get 1,000 copies pressed of a paperback that was well-bound, too, unlike the on-demand ones. And then I started writing, I started making films. And I immediately I immediately took like all my punk rock ethic of how I survived in a band on no money and very little money for years, and all the corners we cut and all the ways we did things on the cheap, DIY stuff. I mean, I was DIY before I knew the word DIY, before it was really even a term. And I wrote this book called $30 Film School, and it came out in 2002, and it's still selling. Mm-hmm. It's on a major publisher, and I got a, you know, got a, an advance to write it, and I get royalties on it. And one of the things I said in there was I didn't suggest breaking the law. I said, I've heard of people doing this, but statute of limitations is over. It was me. I did it. I basically found some of those, you know how cities will put up those temporary cardboard signs? Like if they're going to be ripping up a street, they'll say like, no parking here Tuesday through Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just grabbed some of those. And when I was doing a shoot on a street, making a film on another street months later, I hung them up like the night before or the afternoon before to clear the street so I could get my shot.
Wow.
And I took them down when I was done. And I suggested in the book that people could do that. And that was one of the main critiques of that book, but it was also kind of one of the main defining moments of it. It was like that was the whole attitude of the book, was like, not only don't ask for permission, make your own permission. And that was one. The other is there's a movie I saw. I don't know the name of it. It's a 10-minute or 15-minute documentary that showed at the Silver Lake Film Festival in Silver Lake, Los Angeles neighborhood in about 2001. And it was a documentary that some guy did about some, I guess, what are they calling it? Tactical urbanism. Basically, there's a place on the 5 freeway in Los Angeles where they have overhead signs of like what the next exit is, and they're really confusing, and it doesn't tell you, like, everybody always misses their exit there if they're not from that neighborhood. Huh. And what he did was he filmed this entire process showing his face. He designed a sign that was correct and would make you understand where your exit was. He didn't put it over an existing sign. He put it to the right where there was a space telling you exit for this neighborhood here. And he was a designer and a metal worker, and he made a perfect duplicate of an LA County road sign. Like, he went to their website and saw, like, found out like the Pantone numbers of the colors they use. And he bought that paint, put the right amount of reflective dust into it. And it looked perfect, especially from a distance. And then he got four friends to help him, two filming from different locations, and then him and another guy put on jumpsuits and drove up in an unmarked van that they'd put like a sign on the side that said like LA County Highway Service or whatever. And, you know, during a busy business day, they put up a ladder, they climbed out over the traffic, and they attached it with hose clamps, you know, very securely. And it stayed there for a long time until this movie came out, and then the government took it down and tried to arrest him. But I think he moved to a different city or something. But I thought that was really cool tactical urbanism. It's kind of the opposite of graffiti, because graffiti on public – I hate it on private property, but on public property, I don't really have an opinion with it. If it's pretty, I don't really care that much. But it's also kind of like it's very up to the viewer of whether or not it does anything good for an environment. But, you know, people don't – some people just don't like it. They think it does not improve but does the opposite. But a road sign that makes things clearer, it's kind of hard to argue with that, although –
the government will find a way to argue with
and
it.
I think a lot of people would say, well, if everybody did that, all the signs would be confusing. And it's like they are already, and nobody does that unless they're trying to improve things generally. So
Yeah, it's very cool. Citizens taking issues and problems into their own hands and resolving them.
Yeah, and to some people that sounds crazy, because that sounds like, well, that's just a slippery slope to murdering, executing people yourself, you know. But those people are statists. Those are people who want to tear down your house and make a museum to the state.
Yeah. So yeah, we don't like those people.
Anything else on this, or we got another topic?
Yeah, and not really. I mean, that was the gist of it. It's always very encouraging to read those kind of stories, like the one in Detroit in particular. I don't know if it was, you know, a couple years ago, maybe I saw something on the interwebs where the Detroit citizens were basically, doing exactly what you said. You know, they were, you know, taking issues into their own hands. They were, I mean, there was some like homesteading going on actually, where people were moving into abandoned homes. I mean, it's like, you know, they're not hurting anyone. They're improving things. They're making things work for themselves as a community. And, you know, I certainly can't argue with that. But, it can happen. You know, it can really happen. You know, people can do this. You know, most people, I think, want good things, you know, to look at, to come home to be a part of. And, I think that the whole slippery slope argument is that, you know, everyone just wants everything to go to crap, you know, so and kill each other over minor grievances and that kind of thing.
Well, that's what statists generally think would happen without the mm-hmm. government. But the thing is, the government isn't around most of the time anyway, and people are decent mm-hmm. to each other. And anytime mm-hmm. you do something like have a picnic with your family, you're literally engaging in anarchy. You know, you are voluntarily doing things with a group of people. And nothing goes wrong. And, you know, most people, I mean, how does the government present itself? It presents itself by the cop, you know, I mean, a law without a cop backing it and the cop backing it is the threat of the gun to your head if you don't comply mm-hmm. and the threat of being thrown in a cage. Mm-hmm. Without the cop, a law is just a suggestion. Mm-hmm. And think about most of the time, like people go through their lives and there's no cops around most of the time. I mean, I guess in a place like New York City, there's a cop on every corner because that's what those people have let their government build for them. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I mean, we kind of have a soft police state. You know, we have like little bits of police state here and there, but overall, there's not much government around and things work fine. And people just imagine, they have this fantasy, this brainwashing, what do you call it? Denmark syndrome.
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, I'm kidding. People call Denmark, it's often called Copenhagen syndrome because people can't remember. Americans can't remember. But people have that and they imagine that without, you know, the cop 40 minutes away, if you call 911, that society would collapse. We'll be back with more in the final bit of Freedom Fiends After Dark after this trip to the free market.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Go, go, freedom fiends!
Freedom fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom fiends! Doing the things that I've
taking the world from the state! Fighting the forces of hate!
Helping the helpless, freedom fiends, saving the universe, freedom fiends.
go blow. Yeah, it's Michael Dean, After Dark. So, Diana.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about how not everyone in the world thinks America's number one, USA number one, USA number one anymore. Yeah. Go.
go. Okay, so there's this article I found in The Economist today, and it's titled The Decline of Deterrence, and subtitled America is no longer as alarming to its foes or reassuring to its friends. And, you know, it says America's allies are nervous with Russia grabbing territory, China bullying its neighbors, and Syria murdering its people. Many are asking, where is Globocop? I love that. Globocop.
Yeah.
Under what circumstances will America act to deter troublemakers? What ultimately would America fight for? And then the goes on to say, the answer to this question matters. Rogue states will behave more roguishly if they doubt America's will to stop them. While the wolf is eating the sheep, there's no shepherd to come to the rescue.
Man, America really thinks highly of itself. You know, and even mentioning the question that we're asking of, is America still the greatest country in the world? I mean, that boils the blood of brainwashed statist Americans. You know, like whether they're Democrats or Republicans, they're like, how dare you even consider that question? Of course, USA is number one. But it's like, I mean, if you enumerate it in various things like education, America's far from number one. You know, having good education, even graduation, America's far from number one. Basic standard of living, America's far from number one. America does not have the lowest infant mortality rate in the country, in the world. It does not have, you know, the highest average age that people die at. It doesn't have a lot of the things that it used to. It used to be number one in almost everything. Pretty much, it's number one in military spending, incarceration of percentage of its citizens, and obesity. And I'm kind of paraphrasing. I'm kind of paraphrasing the opening rant in the first episode of the first season of The Newsroom, which is a great show. But that stuff's all accurate. It's like basically, it's kind of explaining the main character, like what he's about. You see him up on stage at some university speaking, and there's a moderator and a Republican and a Democrat, and then Will, who's our hero. And Will is Will's a moderate Democrat, but he's moderate Republican. But he's basically like, his whole thing is trying to bring truth back to news, like the William Murrow thing back to news, which is pretty much impossible without being on the internet. Yeah, so that's true, though, man. The only thing America is number one anymore is military spending, incarceration of citizens, and obesity.
Yeah, sad but true.
And there are people that would, like, punch you in the face for saying that, you know, and they couldn't really back it up with anything logically. They'd be like, but America number one, you know, or it's Obama's fault. We just need to get the right guys in there. But
right, I know, yeah, the great man fallacy. It's like, yeah, once we get Obama out of there, everything will be just fine.
I'll say something else that America's number one on. Still, for some reason, allowing people to criticize the government on radio. That's pretty much it, man. Like, literally, what we're doing would get you shot in a lot of countries, but just in most countries, you couldn't even do it. Like, even in free countries like England, you know, you can criticize the Labour Party or the Conservative Party on radio in England, but you can't just criticize government in general in countries like that.
There's only
I don't know that it's a law. You would just never get on radio. Like, you could do it on pirate radio, but no, in most countries, there isn't the niche of commercial radio that allows this kind of ultra libertarian talk. You know, basically, there's two shows. There's Free Talk Live and there's us.
Yeah. You're right about that, about the, you know, most Americans would, you know, get very bristled about, you know, that we're not number one anymore. But it's like, okay, look at history. You know, there have been these great empires that did not last forever. They just didn't. You know?
They don't. So. They don't, and they won't. And I hope this one is not replaced with another one. I hope it just gently retires and goes to play golf and hang out with its family and leaves us alone as we bring liberty to the world.
Yes. Yes. Give Preach me a, it, give Brother
me a,
Michael.
Give me a worms, sister.
Worms.
Sister Diana, thank you.
Meow. Meow.
Freedom Fiends, yo. Dig it.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.